There we are. So we're pleased to be speaking with Kenneth Woods, who is the principal conductor of the English Symphony Orchestra, or shall we say ESO for short, Kenneth. So tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, and your own musical background.
I'm a native of Madison, Wisconsin, grew up in the Great Lakes region of the United States, became interested in music at a very early age. I was first taken to see a local youth orchestra rehearsal when I was about 3.5 years old.
Oh, that's an early start.
And I just was there to watch, but they were playing Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony.
Oh.
And it was love at first sight, you know.
Yes.
So after that, my parents started taking me to concerts, enrolled me in piano lessons. I started studying the cello through the school orchestra program, which are public schools, American state schools, offered at the time, and progressed then through youth orchestra, and then went on to study cello at Indiana University, and then later cello and conducting at the University of Wisconsin and the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music. And I've been living in the UK now for about 13 years.
So what brought you to the UK? Was that a musical connection, or...?
It was a mixture of musical and better than musical. My wife is a violinist.
All right.
We met in Texas, of all places, at a music festival.
Yes.
Called the Round Top Festival, which is between Houston and Austin, central Texas.
Okay.
And played in a string quartet together and became friendly. And not long after that, she won her job with the BBC National Orchestra of Wales. I was teaching at a university on the west coast of the United States around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a few years, we thought, well, you know, if we still like each other after 3 years on different continents, maybe we should try to get to the same place.
Yes. So that's what brought you to the UK.
Indeed, yes.
And here you are in Welsh Wales.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, your accent obviously sets you apart, I would think.
Yes, and no sign of it changing too much.
Yeah. No, we shan't hear this, any signs of the Welsh lilt yet. So tell us now about the English Symphony Orchestra, because that obviously had small beginnings. I mean, most things start kind of fairly small, don't they? Then they kind of grow. So how did that start?
Orchestra was founded by a colleague of mine named William Boughton. William founded it in the late 1970s, early 1980s. Initially as a string orchestra, and it was originally called the Vivaldi Chamber Orchestra. And it was a group of friends, many of whom had been members of the now disbanded BBC West Midlands Light Music Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
William was always someone with a great sort of entrepreneurial gift, you know, a setter up of things, a maker of things.
Mm-hmm.
So he got the orchestra started. Not long after they got going, I think it was clear that Vivaldi Chamber Orchestra was somewhat limiting as a brand. And so it became English String Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they began to broaden the repertoire into pieces involving winds and brass, English Symphony Orchestra, we still play under both names, and we still record under both names. So when we perform as a string orchestra, we're English String Orchestra. When we perform as a symphony orchestra, it's a symphony orchestra.
Okay.
William had a few, I think, really great ideas when he started the orchestra. If you actually look at the region where the orchestra is based, and it's always been sort of housed in Worcester and Malvern, with a sort of primary remit around the area between Birmingham and Bristol.
Yes.
You know, more or less the sort of three choirs.
Covering the Cotswolds, even.
Covering the Cotswolds. Well, there is no other professional orchestra in residence in that part of the country.
No.
And so it's always been the orchestra of Elgar country, always been the orchestra of that part of the nation.
Yes.
The other thing he, I think, was very visionary about was saying, you know, what can we contribute to the musical life of the country that other orchestras aren't doing?
Mm.
And particularly as a string orchestra, he realized there was a huge swathe of English string music from the first half of the 20th century that had enormous appeal, enormous possibility and potential for audiences, which at that point wasn't really being played or recorded or taken very seriously. A whole lot of early 20th century British music, I think, fell out of favor in the 1960s when we got very high and mighty about music needing to be really terribly serious all the time. So William formed a very productive relationship with Nimbus Records and began recording a lot of that music. And those recordings continue to be played all over the world. And the ESO, I think, is one of the great cultural exports of the region. You know, our recordings continue to be heard on radio stations all over the United States.
And they're going to be heard on NCCR.
Good. Well, we love that. And, you know, that, you know, includes mainstream figures like Elgar and Von Williams, less known composers like Finzi and Bax. The other final piece of the puzzle I think that William added was identifying artists that the ESO could collaborate with over time and build really interesting and fruitful partnerships.
Yes.
Orchestra being a relatively small operation in scale compared to, say, the LSO or the CBSO, you're not going to be competing pound for pound to hire the most famous soloists at the absolute peak of their careers. But he was very adept at identifying emerging talents. And if you look at many of today's leading British artists, people like Stephen Isserlis, Daniel Hope, Nigel Kennedy, all of them had long and productive associations with the ESO throughout the 1980s and 1990s.
Right.
And so
nurturing their talents.
Nurturing their talents.
Yeah.
And William also was good at recognizing when there were eminent veteran musicians whose careers were at a moment where they needed a second look. So he worked very closely with Sir Michael Tippett at the end of his life, and worked very closely with Yehudi Menuhin, who became the orchestra's principal guest conductor for the last decade of his life. And that's an association the orchestra remains, of course, very proud of.
Sure.
William stayed with the orchestra until 2005. He was succeeded by a very, very legendary British conductor, Vernon Todd Handley. And Todd was just exactly the right guy for the ESO. His advocacy of British music throughout his career is really like no one else. His discography is so inspiring to look at, all the wonderful works he brought to the wider attention of the listening public. And he loved the ESO. He had, I think, never really found his perfect orchestra.
I mean, he found his perfect place.
Yes, I mean, he had distinguished relationships with both the Liverpool Philharmonic and the Ulster Orchestra in terms of recording LPO, but a music directorship not until ESO. He was already quite elderly and not in great health, and he stayed with the orchestra until his death in 2008, which was a real blow for everyone involved. He was absolutely beloved by everyone in the organization. And following his death, the orchestra went through a period of experimenting with guest conductors, player-led projects, different kinds of management setups that they explored for a while until 2013, when I first became involved. At that time, I was principal guest conductor of the Orchestra of the Swan in Stratford-upon-Avon.
Oh, right, yeah. Not far down the road from me.
Yes, and had a wonderful run with them and a successful series of recordings and concerts over several years. ESO initially asked if I'd be interested in conducting just a small series of concerts in Malvern to see how we got along. And then gradually the relationship developed. I was made principal conductor in 2014 and then artistic director in 2016.
So here we are, up to date.
Here we are now, yeah.
So are we talking here a professional orchestra, as in paid, or where does the funding, is it just a case of trying to fill seats, or is the Arts Council funding here?
I don't think there's ever been an orchestra who could pay for their operations out of ticket sales, with the possible exception of things like Andre Rieu. But, you know, even in those instances, you need huge capital investment to build the brand and build the audiences.
Yes.
And they're playing to huge, huge, huge venues.
Yes.
The orchestra is fully professional, and our aspiration is really to be an orchestra of international standard.
Yeah. Yeah.
The organization is not a huge one. We're run as a charity, but 90% of our budget goes into our musicians,
yes.
who are the backbone of everything yeah. that we do.
Sure.
And we seek to engage and retain the best musicians in the country.
Mm.
The orchestra is paid on a freelance basis, as are most British orchestras, yeah. all the London orchestras, LSO, LPO, RPO, and all the main chamber orchestras.
So it'd be like, we've got a gig coming up, and they're paid on that basis.
Exactly, yes. But we work very closely with our colleagues in the orchestra to try and make sure that when we put the orchestra in front of the public, it's our orchestra. It's not just a random collection of whoever happened to be free on that day.
True.
And we have two founding members of the orchestra are still playing with us, which is wonderful. You know, there's a significant number of colleagues in the orchestra who've been with us over 20 years.
Mm.
And, you know, on any given night, you know, a good 90% of the band is our core,
sure.
regular, true blue ESO. So the finance of the arts in this country is under enormous pressure right now, to answer your question about the money side of it. The model by which arts work in all genres is funded has changed a lot. We do receive very, very important and vital support from the Arts Council. That's relatively recent for us. The orchestra was very significantly supported by the Arts Council until 2005. At that time, there was a sort of cull of a number of chamber orchestras, including us, Orchestra of the Swan, London Mozart Players. So it took a good 10 years to rebuild the relationship with the Arts Council through small incremental projects, building towards more regular funding. But these days, one doesn't simply get a grant that covers the cost of your operation. Everything is, we'll give you this if you get that. And how much can you deliver for X?
Mm.
And so it's an attempt in a way to kind of balance what is left of the old state-funded model, which is really no longer viable in this country, just because there's not enough money going around, with the American model involving corporate sponsorship, private philanthropy, foundations and trust funding and stuff like that. It is a system that doesn't really work right now, to be honest. And I think all orchestras and opera companies and museums are finding it extremely challenging. There will have to be, I think, changes to the tax code to incentivize charitable giving in a more generous way.
And to support these, what might be termed heritage orchestras, which, you know, keep bringing, in this instance, the English music or British music from the early 20th century.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we need to find ways of incentivizing orchestras to take risks also. And there's an enormous pressure now to demonstrate that orchestras are building audiences, which we should be. We absolutely should be. But we also need space to commission and record new works, which tend to not necessarily pack the house.
No.
And
critically acclaimed, I think, is the phrase, isn't it?
Yeah.
That says very nice, but didn't sell any.
Often the works and the projects that have the longest and most important impact start small and build over time. And in a very commercially driven market, it's extremely hard to have the flexibility and the patience to let these things build and develop.
Because time is finite, isn't it?
And time is money. Every day that you're running the orchestra costs
money. So you've got how many concerts kind of lined up in the near future? Half a dozen. What would be the, you know, the sort of spacing between concerts? Do you do what, 10 a year, 12 a year, 20 a year?
We run self-promoted series in Worcester, Malvern, and Hereford. Each of those is typically 3 or 4 mm. events in each town.
Mm.
You know, sort of usually 3 main ones, and then maybe a holiday program or a family concert, things like that.
Yeah.
And then we do anywhere between 2 and 5 concerts in London a year.
Yeah.
And then quite a bit of engagements
and
run out concerts. We play at festivals. So we're performing at the English Music Festival in May. We do things as far afield as places like Lincoln and Manchester.
And you're coming to Cheltenham.
And we're coming to Cheltenham. We're there twice in the current season. We
had
a concert there in November, which went very well.
Yes.
We love Cheltenham Town Hall. It's a great venue for us. It's a good size for,
yes.
for us and
yes.
a wonderful acoustic.
Yes.
And then we're back there June 21st.
I shall make every effort to be there.
Yeah, please do. It should be good.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, so that's covered most of the points I was thinking of. Now, I'm just going to stop this a minute.